County Managers Briefing, April 8th, 2015.
Yep, I think it's ready to go. I just forwarded it.
Okay.
Is it?
Okay, Commissioners, today for your County Managers Briefing, we have Bill, and we're going to talk about Parks Ambassadors and Lifeguards. Bill?
Well, good morning, Commissioners, and thank you, Councilors. I'm sorry, and thank you for having us.
I have to apologize. We answered it in English. I purposely called my fellow Councilors here. Commissioners, once in a while, just make everybody
there. There you go. Well, with me today, I've got Eric Christensen. He's our Parks Scheduler. I think you've met, and he's giving you a little demonstration as to our reservation system that we've got in our office. And so today we're here to talk about the Park Ambassadors and Lifeguard programs and just kind of an overview. And so let's go to the first slide. And I'll slide up here. So operating seasons. Yeah, our operating season is May 1st to September 30th. And this is actually our third year we're going into with the Park Ambassador program. And they operate in our regional parks, primarily Louisville, Vancouver Lake, Frenchman, and Salmon Creek parks. And they assist in welcome events and shelter reservations, monitor park rules, and I'm going to read it from here because my eyes are not quite good enough to focus in on that. Monitor park rules and policies, general park appearance, and they actually establish a presence in our parks. And they provide great customer service. And so they're essentially there when we're not. They do operate from about 11 o'clock to 7 o'clock. And so our staff is typically off by about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And that's typically when all the people are starting to show up. And so just having that presence in the parks keeps people from going and doing the things that they really should not be doing. And if our ambassadors see folks that are not exactly following them, on the rules, they'll approach them and let them know that they are in violation of the rules. So they're not there for enforcement purposes, but they are there to inform folks that they're getting a little far off base when it comes to the use of the park. So let's go on to the next one. The staffing level for the ambassadors is 10 to 15 ambassadors, and they work 7 days a week. And we figured that 15 ambassadors gives us that good coverage throughout the course of the week. So at any given time, we've got 2 to 4 ambassadors per park site. Typically at Vancouver Lake, Frenchman's Bar, Salmon Creek, we've got 2 ambassadors. At Vancouver Lake, at Louisville Park, we have 4 because that park is so big. So it's nice to have somebody there at the booth in front and just greeting people and giving them a little piece of paper that shows the park rules. And just establishing the fact that there's a county employee in the park and that has identified them. So
how would a visitor know who the park's ambassador is?
They have a bright red shirt. Is it bright red?
Uniforms.
They have uniforms.
They'll have a county lanyard, 90 badge, red shirt with the county logo on it, and staff
on the back. And they're usually on a little John Deere ATV Gator, and they cruise around that way. And they actually help folks get into the reservations. You know, if they have a heavy cooler or something, they'll put it in the back of the gator and drive them up there. Just in general, they work with a lot of elderly folks and help them to get to the shelters. So there's a real good purpose for them to be there.
And we've given them one cell phone per site so they can communicate with customers in the parks. And additionally, we've given them some business cards with those phone numbers just so they can have customers when they're driving through and say, hey, if you can reach us during your event, here you go. They'll be on site.
Bill, that sounds really good. That just, you're hitting a home run, getting an all bases loaded. I am curious, you have one cell phone per site, but you've got multiple people. I wonder if it would be helpful if they also had some local convenient walkie-talkie that if one of them faces a situation, they can call the other ones because maybe the other person has a cell phone.
Right. I think they do have walkie-talkies, don't they, so we communicate between them?
We've experimented with that a little bit, but we haven't gone in one to every single staff.
That's a good suggestion, though, so they can talk between them, because sometimes if we have 2 ambassadors in one park, they could be separated.
Yeah.
And they can be calling.
So just keep in mind that we're not saying they need to, but we're saying that if they want them, we feel it would be helpful for them to be able to somehow be able to coordinate and ask for help when they need it. Certainly have our I assume have support here to provide that.
Great. Well, thank you. And I don't think we'll do much. Just the Radio Shack walkie-talkies that are $50 a pair, and we're moving forward. So, yeah, good suggestion. Thank you. And so basically with the staffing per site, there's usually one lead person who's very well experienced along with an assistant. And just so you know, these are temporary employees. And so they're hired through Northwest Staffing Resources, and they work, you know, that particular time frame in the summertime, and then they go on their way. But it's surprising, you know, folks really, we've gotten actually a lot of applicants for these positions because first and foremost, they're out in the parks, they really enjoy it. And they like people, so that's kind of the criteria that we have for our folks coming on board. So,
and that is customer service focus. It's really good.
Exactly. That's the biggest part of it.
We also don't have regular repeat temporary employees that come back year after year.
We sure do. Yes. Yes. In fact, how many of our investors are repeat from last year?
Almost all. Yeah. They're going to return. We might have two or three new ambassadors
here, but most of them are in return for previous. Great. Yeah. Very good. And a lot of our ambassadors, of course, you know, some of them are college kids, and so after they graduate, they move on. And so we're always having to bring somebody new in, but we've got so many veteran folks that they can train the new folks real easily. So it's great. And so along with the shift times, you know, I said 11 to 7 is pretty typical, but when we get into the hot days or weekends, as you recall, we had an incident last year down at Fishman's Bar, and we talked about extending their shifts later into the evening so that we've got that good coverage until folks start clearing out of the park. And so that's not going to change. We're still going to have that capability.
Yeah, being that we do have, during the summertime, daylight to almost 10 o'clock, the question is, I see that the normal times are till 7. During those peak shift times, and you alluded to it, but I would think that during that time it would be a regular, that there would be presence there. Because I can imagine if they know that park ambassadors leave at 7, and they got 2 or 3 more hours to kind of do what they really want to do when they're not there, I think it would be a good idea for us to have presence
right
during those hours.
Correct. And I know last year after that we had that event down at Frenchman's that we actually did extend our hours. And I think that's the intent going forward this year as well. So we want to make sure that they're there for later into the evening.
So that's where it works?
Yes. It'll be pretty much status quo from last year when we made that change. And then also, since last year, we have installed security cameras at Frenchman's Bar and Vancouver Lake. And right now we're working with Verizon to, it's only $40 a month, but we can live stream back to our computers. And so we can actually see what's going on. We'll get to Doug Bent as soon as we get back up, and that way you can actually take a look at these sites. And it'll show on the screen, it'll show 4 different views of the park, you know, so the beach, the promenade, you know, and towards the shelter. And you can actually see in real time what's going on up there.
Is
and
then we're also. Archived? Is that stored?
It stores 300 hours of data. Great. So if something does happen, we can actually go back 300 hours, which is plenty of time to react. And then we're also going to allow the Vancouver police to have that access as well, so they can kind of monitor it and hopefully not wait for us to call them. They can see something going on and respond automatically. So that's the intent. So just taking some small steps towards security. We noticed on this last hot spell we had, we've seen a lot of folks showing up at Frenchman's Bar with alcohol. You can kind of see that we're going to go down that road again this year. So hopefully we'll take the proper steps to, you know, stop it.
That's what's been going on at Frenchman's Bar for half a century.
Oh, man. Yeah, you're right.
And Vancouver Lake Park is all of the Frenchman's Bar park in the county. Is there any part of that that's in the city?
It's all in the city.
It's all in the city.
Correct. It's a county-owned park within on city territory, so that's why we have to have Vancouver police patrol it for us.
The county owns it, but it's within the Vancouver city limits.
Correct.
And yes. Vancouver Lake is the same.
Same one. Yeah. Those two parks are
so
in the city.
So how did that happen?
Well, I think the city. We actually asked the city to go out. Do that to cover both parks so we can have emergency services, otherwise we wouldn't have had. And but as a regional provider, we can own regional parks within the city. Captain William Clark Park is a great example. That's a county-owned park in Washoe. And so Louisville Park, or actually Camas, we've got Akamas Lake Regional Park, and it's completely surrounded by the city. The city of Camas, the footprint of the park itself is not actually the city, it's been annexed into the city. So, but even though these parks may go into a city area, or if there's an annexation, we have the right to retain that park.
Yeah, and that's great. Does the city share the cost of guaranteeing?
Nope. It's 100% county.
So their citizens get the benefit of the park, but the city isn't sharing any cost?
No, they're not. No. And
it's
funny because with regional parks, our regional parks are intended to serve all of Clark County. So they're drive-through destinations. So county residents, city residents, and even Portland utilizes our shelters. Yeah, so.
Those are wonderful parks. And I live in that quadrant of the city.
Okay.
I've used all those parks frequently.
Great, thank you.
For fishing and not swimming and walking, picnicking. They're very active parks.
Yes,
and we're lucky that we have.
It was interesting. After we built Freshman's Bar, it kind of became a sleepy park where nobody really knew about it. All they knew is they couldn't drink there anymore. Well, in the last couple of years, it's really been picking up in popularity. And so, I mean, last year was a good example. It was a body pack down there. You know, most days, whenever it was hot, it was full. Fishermen still love to go down there, and they have a grandfather clause that we allow them to build their little shelters on the beach until the season closes, and then. We understand that they have to get the shelters back off, so. But we still don't allow overnight, stays there.
Bill, related to that, the paved trails that connects and Hoover Lake to Frenchman's Bar, those are county trails as well.
Correct.
City
lands, yes. Yep.
Those are beautiful paved trails.
Yes,
so it's so nice to be able to ride your bike along there. That's just fabulous. Related to the city-owned or city limits, county-maintained and providing parks, I don't begrudge that at all. I'm happy to see that the county provides great parks. You're doing a fabulous job. All the staff is doing a great job operating and maintaining the parks, and they're being doing it less budget than we ever used to, managing them well. And related to that, isn't it Whitler Park that has over by the Water Resource Center, and there's also a parking area there for people that have a boat launch. That's city.
Yeah, that's Waterfront Park, and that's that city.
So all of that's called Whitler Park?
No, Whitler Park is actually due west on Highway 14.
What's the name of that one there?
I think it's called Marine Park.
Marine Park, okay. And that's where you got the tower.
Yes.
Climb. I look at that and I see that parking areas doesn't ever seem to be enough during the peak hours. And I also see you got that Iron Ranger there that's asking everybody for money.
Yes.
And during the peak hours, I can imagine they must rake in a lot of money that goes to them.
Right.
But during many hours, people don't go because they see the Iron Ranger that's going to have to keep asking for money. I'm curious, it's just brainstorming, thinking out loud. I like the idea that parks serve our citizens, and we're not at other, and our taxes are already going for parks.
Mm-hmm.
They already paid for them.
Mm-hmm.
If that marine park, then if the city would be interested to transfer that to the county so that we can make it free for the citizens to use and potentially provide better parking there. Just a thought. I assume that they'd be happy to transfer that because parks cost money to operate.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even have enough money to run their sprinklers and still charge citizens. I would rather citizens get better served. I think maybe your department might be able to do a little better job. A little friendly competition.
I can certainly ask the question. They really don't have that. I think they consider that a regional facility, which is, I think, the only one they've got. And so we can ask the question.
Here's the finance team coming back at you to remind you that we don't have the money to maintain it either.
That's weird.
Acquiring a built park is, pardon?
I see the need. I need to jump in here and maybe look the other way. as a general practice, when the urban growth boundary of the city limits grows out, those county parks become city parks. And I would like to entertain the idea of looking into the impact as to giving them to the city. They're in the city, they belong to the city, and need to be run by the city. City doesn't come out to the county and support the county in those things. We support the city museum, we support the museum of the arts commission down here. We provide 67% of all county health services to the city. I think after a while, and we get nothing for that. And they also have been given up taxes, and been given free taxes to people to build certain things in the, within the city. We suffer from that because 15% of that tax pays to the judicial system. So we're getting the short end of the stick here, and we can't keep giving it away. I think that's where a budget bottom is going to go, is that we struggle to maintain the park to the category, which we would like to do. We have several parks that we have not developed, and we have several parks that we don't even maintain. So to take on more for nothing is not too bad. I would recommend going, I would actually recommend the opposite direction. And we get those complaints when we go through the bar. And the whole thing's in the city. I left here. The whole thing is sitting in the city.
I had a chat with Eric Holmes here a few months ago, and we kind of asked that question. He says, we have no intention of being a regional service provider, which means we don't want parks. And I think that the story would be different if it were a community or neighborhood park that were annexed into the city. And in fact, the 35 Metropolitan Park District parks that were identified, if there is an annexation occurs, there's actually language that states that those parks wouldn't be transferred over to the city, and we would have to pay the city maintenance dollars to maintain it thereafter for years to come. That's the only caveat. Yeah.
Our regional parks are unique. They're not like neighborhood parks or community parks. They are unique destination points for the whole county. So I think the jurisdiction that it's in really doesn't matter, that it's a county-wide function. For example, Frenchman's Bar is one of the few places where they can go to a park that with Columbia River access. Louisville, it's a unique destination point. So it's not at all unusual for the county to maintain what are truly destination point regional-wide facilities, I think. My main point is we maybe someday can afford to take on more parks. I won't even say maybe someday. Absolutely someday we have to, because we have an obligation to build some more MPD parks. But, the finance team said we were going to keep coming back and reminding the councilors that we have a burden right now on the MPD that has to go back to general fund before we start increasing our maintenance on anything. So I think we'll get there, but as far as whether it's a county park inside the city limits or we give it to the city, I think that's a policy decision, but it's certainly not unique or unusual for counties to own regional facilities. Of course, across the river they have Metro. So nobody owns everything. Metro owns those kind of regional facilities. Metro owns Blue Lake Park and Chinook Landing and all those other things. We don't have a Metro, so I think that having it be county owned means that the people in Battleground have as much say as to what goes on in Frenchman's Bar as the people in Vancouver do. It's a county-wide park, and if they want to go out and go sturgeon fishing at Frenchman's Bar, well, that it's there for the residents of Battleground and Yacolt and unincorporated and every place else. So ownership, I don't know that it would save us money or gain us any money to say who owned it, who didn't own it. I think we do a better job with the parks. I think we create much nicer facilities for the citizens.
That's really my point, because there are a couple of things that are in play on this. We do a much better job, I believe, monitoring, attending to our parks, being responsive for park needs. I think the county does a wonderful job on that. So my points are twofold. One is county parks, I don't necessarily think we should transfer them to the city. We do the best job on these kinds of parks for making them safe, making them a good place, the parks reservation system, all that. I would think there could be a way to get them that, since they are in Vancouver, I would think Vancouver would want to help with some kind of financial support. And the reason I say that is because if I believe I'm correct, at least the discussion was that for Furstenberg Center and the Westside Athletic Center, if you were a county resident, you were going to have to pay higher fees.
Right.
And so that tells you that, and I don't think we'd want to go to that step, but that tells you they're saying the cost needs to be shared more than just proportionally to county residents. So some kind of a shared operational cost on these parts, I think it would be fair. But this is, as Mr. Medora said, we're just kind of throwing out ideas.
Yes, and I understand. Bob, I'm so thankful that you are very protective of our general fund. Very aware of that. That's our greatest taxpayer's friend. And so I'm aware of the burden, the cost to the county in order to provide these fabulous parks for our citizens. I would not support the idea of transferring these regional parks to the city of Vancouver, because it's foreseeable the first thing they're going to do is start charging citizens to use those parks, and it's being back like it was before. They'd be very poorly attended, especially by those that need them most. They don't have a nice big backyard that's park-like. They might be coming from an area they don't have any backyard at all. And those are the ones that need people to have free access to the parks. The only reason I brought up the Windler Park thing is they don't have staff there, but they're collecting money from every citizen that wants to use that park. And I just look at that as a disservice for our citizens. And I just look for a potential solution to make that better. We have so many beautiful parks and scenic areas. The Northwest is beautiful, and it attracts a lot of people from that vacation care. And for them to come by, and if they don't pay their thing, they end up with a $250 fee or fine or something, they'll go back and they'll say, I'm never going back to those guys. And we end up doing more harm than good. I just like people to get rid of that and make sure we have the quality of life and the invitations. This is your parks, they're not ours, they're your parks, your taxes paid for them, we just got to be good stewards of them. And you're right, Gene Stewart, the county does fabulous job, a fabulous job, not only operating and those parks, but making them safe and friendly.
I wouldn't want to take anything away from the great job that we do. But I think if we ask the city, they're going to say that they do a better job. So it's all in the eyes of the beholder.
Well, I know, and I'm telling you, we do.
And you can only provide so much service for the budget that we have. When we can't build out the parks that we have, or build the roads that we have, then why are we taking on more responsibility from the city of Vancouver? I have a real issue with that. And Vancouver, by the way, has not only a walking trail patrol lake, they have at least they have also have a big park on the 25th down there. They also have another large park with a boat launch and public access. So it's not as if they're not without. And the reality is that Park County can't provide facilities for the city of Vancouver as we are doing in many cases. So, recognizing the fact that we are hurting so much, I have some radios I used at a trucking company a few years back. They're 800 megahertz with external speakers, or handheld base station, probably a dozen. Not having the time to sell those, if you think you could use those,
Yes, although the 800 megahertz radios do have a monthly fee, that we have to pay to upgrade those?
No, only if you use the towers.
Oh, okay. All right. So well, then, yes, we'll take them.
Yeah, so they go from radio to radio.
Okay.
And in that short distance, it'd be very easy to do, but they're $1,000 radio one day.
And are you offering to donate them?
I was. As long as they'll take out any more city parks.
I will take Eppinger on for you. I will take that. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I think we can move on to the lifeguard piece of the next most interesting piece of our presentation here, of course, is the lifeguard program.
Okay. So just to wrap up on the ambassador program, in 2013 and 14, we got 2,300 shelter rentals, 400 plus exclusive use reservations, and 60,000 event reservation participants. And so these are huge numbers. And so having the Parks Ambassadors there to help assist all these folks it's huge for us. So. Okay, let's move on to lifeguards. So the lifeguard program, that was was actually reinstated in 2013. We shut it down in 2010, the year 2010, because of the big budget crisis, and we had to make several cuts that equaled $1.6 million to the general fund. And back in 2013, our then commissioner said, hey, let's get this program back up and running so we get the splash pad going as well. And so that was a great move, and I can't tell you how popular this park is because we've got the lifeguards and the splash pad there. I mean, parking is a problem. So.
When you say parking's a problem, that's actually kind of good and kind of bad. Good in that you have so many people that are using it.
Yes.
Bad that we wish we had a bigger parking lot, but we also have all those parking spaces to the west there from all field areas
to
serve as an overflow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got the main parking lot, an overflow parking lot, and then way to the west over the ball fields that people actually park there and walk over.
And a good idea to walk over and exercise, right? Get out there. And
absolutely.
if you make it to that, I expect that there are some that don't find it so easy to walk. So you've got senior citizens and those that have disabilities and that kind of thing. Like, being that there is overflow parking for those people that are affected, but before walking the park anyway, I wonder if we have enough that are designated for those that need walks. I just give it. Rather than just simply handicap parking.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, you go to New Seasons restaurant, or rather than one of the door, they have a restaurant there too, New Seasons. They have out in their parking area signs that say for families, for pregnant moms.
Oh, wow.
And those kind of things, and that works really well. It's not a law enforcement thing, but it's a courtesy thing. And it just honors and respects and considers those that are they would go if they had to park with walk because they just couldn't navigate with their walker or their little e-scooter or something.
Sure.
So I like to see the citizen signs.
And there again, that's where the
hurdles are served.
That's where ambassadors come in handy, because they can actually they'll actually put a person onto their gender ATV and bring them right into the park.
The overflow park.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
If they know about them, then they'll bring them on in. So that's part of the customer service that they provide.
Yeah.
So that's what I like about the ambassador program.
There's one more home run, Bill.
way ahead of Councilor McGill.
Well, with the lifeguard program, let's see where we at. Which page are we on here? And they only operate at Klein Lane Pond only. There was talk about expanding that out to Frenchman's Bar, Vancouver Lake, but simply just do not have money. Sandman Creek Park is currently within our GCPD program. It's one of the general fund parks that need to go back, but we're actually able to afford the lifeguards at the site. And so it's been fantastic ever since it got started, and it's getting more popular each and every year. And so when I say there's a parking problem, when it gets really busy, there's actually people parking on 119 all the way up the road. It's kind of dangerous, but they do operate from mid-June, so the first 2 weekends of June, all the way then daily through August, and then the last 2 weekends of September. Or sorry, the first 2 weekends of September, and that's their season. So by that time, the weather starts turning. And the shift times, there again, they vary. It's typically 11 o'clock to 7 p.m. But there again, last year we did the same thing. We had a drowning that occurred at about 8:15 in the evening. And so we did make some variations to the shift to allow them to be there later, especially in the longest days of the year. The sun doesn't go down until nearly 10. We'd have them at times be out there until 9:30. And so we got good coverage. And so we fully intend to do that again this year. But that's the plan going forward. So very successful program so far, and we look forward to another successful year. We did lose Patrick Henry, one of the lifeguards.
Oh, really?
Yes, he joined the
Coast Guard.
And but he's actually, we just met with him just this last week, and he's going to come back and help the lifeguards train to get ready for the season as a volunteer. So that's great.
I have a question about line 11, sadly, it's a creepy question, but it's one that comes up repeatedly. The number of drownings that have occurred at Klein Line over the last 20 years or so, it just seems statistically odd for any kind of a swimming facility. Has anyone done any research about that pond and if it's capable of undercurrents, or does it have drop-offs?
Yes, it does. It does have a real slight undercurrent because it's fed by an underground spring, but the current is so slight you don't feel it. But the water does vary in depth. From our beach, where the people are supposed to swim from, we have a nice gradual decline. We've got markers that show your depths, but the person who drowned jumped off our fishing dock, which is around the other side of the pond, and it drops off to 40 feet almost immediately.
And I think that's no swimming area.
Correct. That's a no swimming area, but people swim there anyways.
And,
and it was unfortunate because
that pond has, I don't know.
It's an old gravel pit, and so
we'll
it was excavated
out.
Sure.
I think the ratio there is not as high as the sewage pipes in our jail.
Well, they're full.
They're not accessible. They're all hurt, wrenching every yard. But you can only protect people so much. We actually had someone drown when we had a lifeguard there. And we had people drown and go up there.
Related to that, as I understand correctly, Bill, there are some additional improvements that were made there around that dock to put the depths. You have buoys or something there that indicates, and you also shortened the dock, or you did something to correct that situation.
Correct. We made several improvements over this last year. We've got a life jacket station that's actually been there for the last couple of years, where we work with the Department of Health. They help out with that, as well as our staff. And there's, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30 life jackets that the kids come in from all sizes, from infants to adults. You can grab a life jacket, and then when you leave, you put it back on the hanger. And that's the little kiosk right there where all the life jackets hang, to your left there. And then we've got depth markers on all of those pilings that are out there. So each and every one of them has a depth marker. So no matter where you're at, you can see what your depth is. And so that's a huge improvement. We're going to put a life ring on either side of the beach. So if the lifeguards are not there, if somebody's drowning, they can run over, grab a life ring, fling it out there. It's got a rope attached to it and pull them in. And so that was a big improvement. Back when we first started up in 2013, the lifeguard program, we've got an AED there, which is a portable defibrillator, in case there is somebody that has a heart attack. Triple A grass carp, this is what we introduced this last year. We actually bought 200 grass carp. Because the pond itself has got pond weeds that are full about that tall underneath on the bottom, and it's really hard to find a person that might have drowned and gone down. And so the purpose of these grass carp is to eat and clean up all the vegetation on the bottom of the pond so that they can be easily identified. We relocated the fishing dock to really shallow water, and last year when we had that drowning, when the lifeguards were not there, the gentleman jumped off the dock to rescue his daughter's hat that blew off her head, and he didn't make it back to the dock and drowned. And so we relocated the dock to shallow water, so they can't use that as a platform to jump into the water anymore. Lifeguard office rehab. This is just general cleanup. The lifeguard office was kind of a pit. It was pretty ugly inside there. So we repainted the floors in the off season this year and the walls, and it's got a much brighter appearance now. And then our actual staff in the off season, they built that sitting wall there to your left, and so people can sit there. And on the other side of this this mound here, you know, the sitting wall is a splash pad, so mothers can watch their children play. And so that to us was just a kind of an aesthetic improvement.
Isn't there also a snack stand there in that same building?
Yep, there's a concession stand on the opposite end of the building.
And is that that's a private business that they lease that space?
Yes, we lease that space to a kid. And he's been there for the last several years, leasing, and we get $1,500 a year from him, I believe.
Well, I'd sure love to see them offer some healthy snacks.
Yeah, we can ask them to do that.
You're not everybody off, yeah.
Well, at least got them to stop selling Starburst candies, because those wrappers were everywhere.
I think Bob was a good
I just sell green smoothies or something.
There you go. That's not a bad idea, you know, having healthy alternatives. So with the lifeguards, we've got 15 to 16 lifeguards, of course. Starting July 1st, they operate on a seven-day-a-week basis. There's two lifeguard managers, and typically have five guards and one manager on staff at any time. And so Friday through Sunday, we have seven guards, because that's when we get the most use. That's when the park is the busiest. So those stands are busy. There's usually a lifeguard standing up and watching the water, and there's a lifeguard behind him watching him and the water as well. So it's kind of a double backup system. It's really
good. Bill, when we started off, I think we were around $12. Are you still there?
Yes. Yes. It's $12 for the lifeguards and $16 for the lifeguard managers. And the way we've got it set up with all of our temp staff is every year that they come back, we give them a 25-cent boost. And so some of them are at $12.25 or $12.50 because this is our third year.
I think we had trouble getting started. That we just going to get out there. Now that we're out there, the word is getting out.
We did.
They would probably visit the park. They probably require.
Yeah, and we actually pay the most of any of the other jurisdictions. They basically pay the minimum wage up to about $10. No. So we bumped up the starting pay to $12. That's when we started getting some applicants coming in. And that was in 2013, and it worked out really well.
You know, Bill, I was so impressed with the lifeguards. I think most people, their experience with lifeguards is, you know, the teenager that sits on the lifeguard stool or seat at a pool or something, and kind of informal, and, you know, it's just, you know, job is a job. That's not the case with these guys at these gals at all. It is amazing. I remember interviewing them. They demonstrated what they do to start up and to close down their shift. Mm-hmm. And I could go up to one of them and ask him a few questions as he's on duty. And he would look at me. And I thought, that guy is so tuned in. He says, I can't look at you. I'm on duty here. And I thought, man, they really take their job seriously. And that was way beyond their professionalism, mm-hmm. and their commitment and their training and all of that. It's like, boy, if anybody wants to know how to be an excellent lifeguard, you've got a demo show going on right there.
Absolutely. And, you know, these lifeguards, they're not necessarily there for the money. They're there to help them fill out the resume. I mean, the training that they receive to become open water lifeguards and the wilderness training that they receive, that's got a huge value attached to it. And we provide that training before they go on duty.
And I'm not surprised that Patrick Henley went to the Coast Guard, because that's the kind of quality I see there with these staff.
Absolutely. And so we still have Jay Wynn as a head lifeguard, and then we're recruiting Kirkham for the second one right now. So we've got a great group of folks, and even some of these lifeguards, there's actually two or three candidates in there that might make an excellent manager for us. So we'll have some good confidence there. Okay. Our annual operating budget for the lifeguard program is $60,000. That's to include the labor for the 2 months plus the 4 weekends, training and education, equipment and uniforms. And so we actually had, well, the first year was a little bit more money because it was a startup and we had to buy all new stuff, like the EDD and all that stuff. And so it's last year, I think we spent about $65,000 overall. So, and that included some of our actual staff time to run the splash pad. So we're trying to hold it really closely to the $60,000 as we can, so we stay right on budget. So here's our stats. Sorry about the phone. I think I have to turn it down here. Our stats, between 13 and 14, we've had rescue of swimmer in the stage of drowning. We've had 11 of those, and that means they would have definitely drowned had not the lifeguards been there. And we've had assistance of swimmers in distress, but not yet in the stage of drowning, 16 of those. And while our lifeguards have been on duty in the last since 13 and 14, we've had zero drownings all on staff. We did have one unguarded drowning last year, which occurred after they had left for the day. Lightning safety advisories, three of those. That means when there's lightning in an area, they clear the water and get everybody out. Water quality beach closures, that happened, unfortunately. It's when we first opened, or got the lifeguard program on board. That was on August 1st of 2013. About a week later, Department of Health shut down the water. And that lasted about a week, but we haven't had any problems since. So that was a salmonella, I believe, issue. Roving park safety patrol, they do that on a daily basis. Beach maintenance and stewardship, weekly. And then water safety advisory, daily. Water bottom searches, they do that daily as a requirement. They have to sweep they put a scuba gear on, and they actually sweep the entire bottom of the swim area.
Why?
Just to make sure that there is nobody.
Or if there are any hazards.
Correct. So if somebody were to dive in at midnight the night before and drown and be there, that closes the liability. You know, so, and so they do the same thing at the end of the shift as well. Spray park upkeep, that's another huge task that they take care of. They got to monitor that every 2 hours and change filters out and all that to keep that splash pad going. That is a huge hit for the small kids. They love that thing, especially on the hot days.
Big kids too.
Big kids like me too. So we talked about the improvements already, and so the life jacket station, all those things, and we're still making minor improvements as we go. So as the lifeguard suggests some items, if it's affordable, we'll pull the trigger on it. So the one thing that's we're kind of proud of is, I'm going to go back to that certification. Our lifeguards applied for that this last year. It's a United States Life Saving Association certification. It usually takes 4 years to achieve. We got it last year. That was great. And so that actually shows the confidence that this association has in us to have a lifeguard program that's truly functional and trustworthy.
And I think it's the best in the Northwest.
It's great, yes. And there's not that many outdoor, open water lifeguard.
Gives us an individual.
What's that?
To the agency.
Go to the agency.
Certifies it all the training and protocols and standards and all sorts of things. Meet the criteria that they set and then goes to a panel with that agency to review it and then they approve that everything that we're doing meets their certifications.
So that's your presentation.
That's it?
I have something that I wanted to comment about just very briefly because I know we're running up on our next series of appointments here. And I'm sure they have some more work to do. But Keith Henderson and I did a tour of the operations center up off 78th, and in there we saw the parks set up. And the online registration system, wow. And it was out of the pilot program, and they had just opened it up for reservations. What a wonderful system that is. So rather than have to call, find a phone number and all that, and go on the county website, go to parks reservation, and you can make a reservation online. I think you can pay online.
That's correct, yes.
And it's that for a lot of families, or sports teams or whomever that are trying to arrange for a park, that is such a wonderful system. And the team that put it together was so proud. And it's just just nice to go out in the field and see actually where people were, see what a good job they're doing. And to me, when I went on the operations tour, the most important thing I saw, those people love their jobs. They want to be there. They like what they're doing. And that, to me, you know, puts people right at the top of the list for doing a good job.
Yes. My entire staff, they're there because they want to be, and they're very proud of the work they do, yes, keeping our parks nice. Yes, there is a competition between us and City of Vancouver, our parks are nice. Yeah. And it's because our staff really want to keep it that way. So, you did a great job. Thank you so much.
I have a question, too. I don't think you were involved in the building of our parks, so I thought you might know if we have any parks to build this summer.
Not this summer. We're definitely looking at 2016. We've got two more parks that we want to build. Mm-hmm. That's East Ellison and Tower Crest.
So on that group of parks, we have one that I think that we probably just do some mowing and whatnot, and that's the one that we're using, trying to duplicate some of our water retention and clean water sites into parks. We have one on 78th Street and about 56th.
Uh-huh.
We have a 7-acre site. I believe that we are on board as one of those that we toured to remove the fence that is on one side. The rest of it's open.
Mm-hmm.
And on this side, we do not enter. I'm over there. Then they use it for a walking area.
Sure.
Also. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know if you'd be aware of that one either.
Yeah, these are clean water facilities, and I think that there's been several discussions about trying to make them more neighbor friendly, as far as, you know, being a destination for people to just actually walk around.
Yes.
And East Thomas Wetlands was recently completed. That's actually abuts one of our neighborhood parks, and it actually provides, I'm not sure the distance is, but maybe like a quarter mile of extra walking distance around this new wetland. And I hope that's going to be the model going forward in the future.
We had one site that we recognize would probably be seasonal, that it would have a walking, you know,
mm-hmm,
walking path around it that is in the neighborhood. And there was deer in it, and he kicked up just ahead of us. And he went into this huge green area. And they thought that there was another park to the west that we might have a trail connected to.
Mm-hmm.
So, stay on board, keep pushing those guys to build those things. We need more facilities.
Yes, yes. Facilities that the citizens can actually get some benefit from other than looking at them.
Yes, yes.
Just a couple of things I've met. Some of the restrooms need to be winterized. We winterize them so the pipes don't freeze each winter. And so we close a number of the main restrooms in our parks in the off season. And it is practice now, isn't it, to include porta potties near the main restrooms when that is the case?
Either near the main restrooms or near the parking lots. So when people get out of the car, they can use a portable toilet and then go on. But most of them are usually right out in front of the restrooms.
Which is very good. I'm glad to hear that. We also provide for restaurants, bar, and fishermen one out there where they...
Yes, we do.
Great. Okay. And the park posts, the idea there is to transition to convert our park caretakers that live on the homes in a number of these regional parks to park posts. How's that coming?
We're going to work on that during the course of the summer and try to make that conversion after the busy season's over to park host probably this October is when we're going to take a hard look at making sure that we can make that transition. I still have to work with legal a little bit on that and make sure that our volunteers don't have an employer-employee relationship, but we have to pay them retirement. From my understanding, even with our caretakers, some of them, if they've actually worked more than 200, I'm trying to remember the numbers, but if they work more than a certain amount of hours for a 3-month period, they are eligible from the time that they've done that for retirement benefits. And that could be 10 years ago, that could be 5 years ago. So we're trying to straighten that out and making sure that if we do have volunteers that are working long term, that there's not an employer-employee relationship there, so we don't have to pay them our retirement.
That's
big. And that's, I think, what I'm trying to do is talk to state parks, because they've got campos, national parks, and I think that might be the reason why they're only there for 3 months, and after that they're gone. They bring in a brand new campos, they rotate
them once.
And so with having our caretaker program in place, with the residents there, it's not going to be very easy getting folks to move in and out of homes, you know, as opposed to a campos that usually brings their own RV and stays in that for the duration. So that's the rub that I'm trying to work on right now.
In the alternative there, I guess when the one is to provide furnished facilities there, get some furniture put up so that you can cycle in those that would camp out for 3 months. And the other is for you to consider putting the RV hookups.
Yes.
Like they do with most of the parks where camp hosts are set up. They bring their RV and they hook up the sewer line and the water and electricity, and they're good until the next one show up.
Yes.
So that park host program is so successful. Low costs once you get it going. And they're all free volunteers, highly social, visible, wonderful people. Looking forward to that.
Me too. I'm really motivated. I'm tired of being a landlord and trying to collect rent from our caretakers. That's always been a problem. And it seems like inevitably there's either one or two or three that are collecting the rent and not in the door. So the campus program would eliminate that.
Right.
We could have them on the course at no cost. So it's just the duration of how long they can stay on site for us. That's the question I'm going to make clear.
Our initial conversation, when we started talking about that, we were looking at things something like 1,000 cradles, where someone would stay there for a couple of weeks, and then someone else would have the opportunity to host that farm.
Right.
And one more question. The utmost park that we have that is not really open to the general public right now is up there on Highway 99, just short of Woodland. We go Highway 99 and then turn and go east about a mile. And we got that, we were gifted that.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's Brett Canyon.
Yeah, we use that for special events, requests.
It's an old
Scouts, Girl Scouts.
Yes, absolutely. Boy Scouts a lot. They have their weekend jamborees there.
Right.
We have equestrians that go there. We have campos there right now. And it's an old campground. It's got a shelter and
dozen sites.
I think 9 that are actually functional for overnight camping. We're not using it for overnight camping, but people go there and day camp and have a great time there. They bring their horses in and ride them around the trails. It's an 80-acre site altogether. And that's another thing is we've got some citizens up there who are very adamant about renaming that park. So I'll be coming to you too. We've got to advertise that. And then I'll come back to you to make that final decision.
Those citizens have cared for that park and kind of adopted that, so I would really respect what they
my mom has been there for 40, 50 years, and Brett can actually do most of the area of where our park is at. So they want to be very correct in the name of that park as to either the geographic location or they're going to. Neil Bronner is the person who lives right across the street. She's suggesting that we have a competition and we advertise out to all the residents, let the kids at the schools, you know, have a naming contest.
Hang on a sec.
That would
be good
if you
could just turn it
down,
keep it in that mode, because we want facilities to catch it in the ass or system and waits for the magic moment.
Or they replace it anyway.
Okay.
So we're going to have a naming contest, and so all the kids from the schools around that area, and as well as adults, can suggest the names for the parks, and then we'll probably use our Parks Advisory Board to help whittle the names down to the most ones that make the most sense.
We have a process for that.
Yes, we do.
A rule.
Yes, we do. We've got a policy.
We don't name it after any live people, just dead people.
Correct. We have a policy that you approved this last year on the staff report. It addresses all of that. And so the counselors will make the final determination. We'll probably provide you the top three names that the Parks Advisory Board has chosen, and then you can make the final choice.
So this caretaker program with parks, or whatever we call it, sounds great. Do we do criminal and background checks?
Absolutely.
Because these are people that are going to be in close proximity to children.
We do that with our volunteers even. It's a requirement.
Yeah. It's a precaution that's sadly needed in this day and age. So protecting the families and the children and anybody.
Absolutely.
So,
glad to hear that. With any staff, we even go to extra staff and get a fingerprinted as well. With volunteers, we send them through a 50-state background check. And then we've had to actually turn away a couple because they had felony.
However intrusive it is, I mean, you're just an innocent person and you're just volunteering and they're lucky to have your time. I understand that. You still have to do.
You bet.
Thank you. You guys are doing a fabulous job. Please make sure the whole team knows that we're all proud of them and they have our full support, whatever they need to keep doing what they're doing.
You're making this look good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Come on.
Thanks, Bob.
Oh, by the way.